Hey, welcome everyone to a Baseball America podcast. College crew is all here on a Monday in my ridiculously messy office. That means Mike Lanana and Jim Schoner are here. Ted Cahill there on the West Coast. And Teddy, you're in what? You're in a coffee shop?
Yeah, I'm in a Starbucks in LA after the Dodger Stadium Classic this weekend.
Well, my short intro will be to remind longtime podcast listeners of the 2013, I believe it was March 2013 podcast I did on the college side where we were talking and I was interrupted by a homeless man. Actually, I believe we were doing a video update, a BA Google Hangout, where I was interrupted by a homeless man who was screaming at the coffee shop about wondering where his pants were. Where are my pants? You took my pants and you threw them out and you can't take my pants and various other things that were said. So trying to keep a straight face while the guy was yelling about his pants.
Sure it wasn't Kramer trying to return some pants? Or?
They were the very pants that he was returning. Yes, it was an odd start to that Google Hangout. So as long as we avoid homeless screaming man coming into the middle of the coffee shop, it'll be an upgrade. But the main thing, Teddy, from your weekend was just fans actually came out to watch some USC and UCLA, and I had Twitter feedback. Now, we need more marching bands at college baseball. So first off, it was Justin P. who tweeted at me, college baseball needs more marching bands. So aside from the marching band takeaway, what was your other takeaways from the Dodgertown Classic? I guess for me, the biggest one was Alec Hanson for Oklahoma pitching really well and reestablishing some of his draft stock. But what were your big takeaways from the Dodgertown Classic?
Yeah, that was definitely a big one on Saturday. You know, Hanson coming out and throwing six scoreless before UCLA got to him in the seventh. And, I mean, just him lasting into the sixth was a big deal for him. He hadn't done that this season, much less at the end of last season. So that was big. And UCLA getting three wins was big. That was a team that needed it. They, you know, lose that opening weekend series to Carolina and then had you know, it just hadn't really started off the way they wanted to. So to get three wins against three pretty quality opponents in that event, you know, could springboard them, and they need it because, you know, their schedule has no let up. Texas is next weekend, and then they open Pac-12 play with Cal. So they needed to get it going, and they did it this weekend. So that was really big for them, I thought.
I'm going to go off on a tangent here, which I know you guys are really surprised by, but is Texas like trying to finagle its way into the Pac-12 baseball-wise? I mean, I know they've played Stanford already, they've played Cal, correct? And now they play UCLA next weekend. I mean, I know Augie has California roots, but I mean, he's been at Texas for 20 years. I mean, maybe he wants to spice things up with some more California fare on his Longhorn Network cooking and eating show. Have you guys ever seen that show?
No,
can't say that I have.
It's just it's Augie going to restaurants. It's like he just so has my dream job. I mean, I'm trying to steal control your controllables. I say that to my kids all the time, inspired by Augie. But
so he's like the Guy Fieri of college baseball coaches.
It's better than that. It's a much better job than that. He goes in and they show him how they're cooking it, and he goes, "Oh, that looks delicious," and then he gets to eat, and he features their restaurant there in Austin. It's just a really, I don't know why I have Longhorn Network, but I do, and that's my favorite show on Longhorn Network. You just watch an Augie go around, always in a burnt orange shirt, and he seems like he has good taste, and there's so much barbecue in Austin, and I love that show. So, I mean, I suppose that he could spice it up with some California fare, but obviously, I mean, that is a big deal for UCLA to get right, guys, and the top of the Pac-12 seems like it's going to be pretty stout. Oregon State, Cal, we have all those teams ranked ahead of the Bruins. They kind of had to right the ship, Mike, didn't they, this weekend? And USC kind of had to start getting going a little bit. I mean, obviously, Teddy, you can chime in a little bit more on this as well, but what was your takeaway on those Pac-12 teams, just overall for the weekend, Mike, not just the ones that were in Dodgertown?
Yeah, well, I think it was very important for UCLA to have a good showing there. I mean, it could have been easy to, you know, after the first couple weeks of the season, be very reactionary and bang them very, very hard in the poll. But, you know, we do believe in the talent that they have there. It's going to be, you know, they're going to have some ups and downs, especially with the injuries that they've had this year, but you have to believe in that coaching staff and the arms that they have. But you look at the rest of the Pac-12, I think Oregon had a very loud weekend against UC Santa Barbara, who came in rolling. You know,
it's like your best 2-1 weekend you can have for Oregon, basically.
They were very hot, and you know, the game that they lost was a 1-0 game that went 14 innings, so you know, it's not like they were blown out. So, you know, the thing that really stood out was, you know, their three left-handers in that rotation, Cole Irvin, Matt Crook, and David Peterson. They're filthy. You know, and especially in that ballpark, which is a pitcher's ballpark, I mean, you're going to have a hard time scoring runs against them, and they have the stuff to pitch anywhere, too. So
those guys are filthy. I mean, we kind of, you know, it makes more sense that, you know, Irvin's an extra year removed from Tommy John. You know, Patterson's not a freshman anymore. He has that year of experience. He was pretty inconsistent last year. Teddy, what was your takeaway with the Trojans this weekend? We've talked about these top, the teams that are ranked. The Trojans were ranked. They lost a series at home to North Dakota. When you do that, it's actually written into the Baseball America bylaws that you drop out of the top 25 when you lose to a Dakota team or anyone named Dakota. But how they look in their bounce back in this weekend? Obviously, they lost the finale to UCLA. What was your takeaway after watching the Trojans in person?
Well, it's three close games for them, which has kind of been their MO, and you know, Coach Dan Hubbs knows that that's the way they're going to play, at least right now, until they get things straightened out, that they're going to play close games. And so they went 1-2, and I mean, they really should have, you know, they can come away from it thinking that they should have won all three. And I know yesterday Hubbs said that, you know, he felt like they didn't play their best baseball, but if they do that, they win those games. And I mean, they need to get going, and it's not going to get any easier because they go to TCU this weekend. So, yeah, that's just like UCLA. There's no let-up for the Trojans, and they didn't quite have the weekend that the UCLA did because they weren't quite able to get into the hub in these one-run games.
Yeah, I'm going to stick with you here, Teddy, because your connection is a little tough, and you're out there, and I want to get a couple more observations from you, and then we'll let you go, and Jimmer and Mike and I will wrap up the podcast. But what was the kind of the rest of your takeaways again from Dodgertown? Mississippi State goes out there. You got to see a tie. So that's congratulations, Teddy. You got to see a college baseball tie. It's very rare. You know, the Bulldogs, obviously Oklahoma's fallen out of our rankings. Mississippi State's still hanging around toward the back of the rankings. You know, you got to see Dakota Hudson this weekend. And like you said, you saw Hanson at his best. At least so far this year. What was your take on the Bulldogs, and how ready are they for the grind of Southeastern Conference play?
Well, I think they're still working some things out. Dakota Hudson was really good on Friday night, and they probably need to win a game like that for him. You know, Griffin Canyon was at UCLA opposing him, but you know, if your starter gives you what Dakota Hudson gave Mississippi State, you know, you got to win those games, really. And then they went back and they won a tough one against USC the next day. And then they jumped out to a nice lead on Sunday. And it looked like Oklahoma wasn't all that interested in playing at the start of that game. It was an early morning game, and Oklahoma looked a little lackluster. But, you know, give Oklahoma credit, they came back and they got a tie in that one because of travel curfew. But, you know, so if you're Mississippi State, I mean, that last Sunday game, you know, letting that one was maybe not ideal. So it's definitely one that they're going to want to have back, I think. But they're in decent shape. It's a young team, you know, the talent's there. It's just a matter of figuring things out there.
Now, Teddy, one other thing I wanted to ask you about. I mean, what was the kind of, you know, you've had back-to-back weekends in big league parks with college baseball, playing those big league parks, and those are some events with some history. You know, it's not the first time they've had the Dodgertown Classic, and it's certainly not the first time. It's like the 10th time they've had the Astros College Classic. What's the compare and contrast the vibes of those two events? You know, what's it like going to a college tournament in a big league park in Texas versus going to one in California? It's your first time at both events. What, compare and contrast them for our listeners who don't go to those games.
Yeah, the Houston one is actually in like year 16, I think.
Oh, wow.
Shopik was the MVP of the first Houston Classic.
That's a long time ago.
It is. He's out of baseball now. But so the atmosphere in Houston was pretty good, especially when the Cajuns were playing. Louisiana Lafayette brought a lot of fans, but it you know, you do kind of get lost in a big league park like that. Here in LA, you know, it's only one day, and they're bringing in two local rivals, and they put 9,000 fans in Dodger Stadium, which obviously can be 50,000, so it still does. It's a little different, but getting the fans in there, I guess last year it was 15,000, and this year there's some weather concerns that kind of muted the attendance a little bit, but the atmosphere was really good in that second game yesterday, the rivalry game. And, you know, USC brought a band and the cheerleaders and the song girls, and UCLA had a band there. And they both have a lot of fans, and it was really a good setting and just a good day for college baseball in Southern California.
Well, I like that. And, you know, again, these Pac-12 teams are playing really good non-conference schedules coming up. So hope that people respond to it, not just when it's the Dodger Town Classic. And good stuff, Teddy. And obviously more stuff to come at baseballamerica.com and in the pages of the magazine. I'm going to let you go. I blame Starbucks for the spottiness of our connection today. But I appreciate you plowing through. And we'll talk to you again next week when you're actually in the office. We miss having you in the office for these.
Yeah, I've been happy to be on the road, but I'll be back in back there on Monday and all weekend for the start of ACC play.
Absolutely. Well, I'm glad you got out there. And safe travels back. Ted Cahill out from California. Thanks again, Teddy. We will continue here on the Baseball America podcast right after this from SeatGeek, who is our sponsor here on the Baseball America podcast. Well, this Baseball America podcast's sponsor is SeatGeek. And one of the things we love about SeatGeek is they've been wondering if you've ever been frustrated trying to buy tickets online. And most sites make it complicated and then try to sneak in huge fees at checkout. That's why you need to try SeatGeek, because they've made it better and easier than ever to buy and sell sports and concert tickets. I'll tell you, for me, the big one on the horizon is I'm Greek. And in Greek, my name is Yanni. And April 3rd, Yanni comes to Durham to DPAC. I don't want to pay full price for Yanni. In fact, I should get in free for Yanni because my name is Yanni. But I'm going to have to go to SeatGeek to make sure that I get the best price for Yanni when he comes to Durham. And here's how SeatGeek makes that happen. First, I have the app on my phone, and they take all the work and the hassle out of shopping for tickets. SeatGeek pulls all the tickets available on other sites into one place. It saves you time, and you never miss a deal. Even better, every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on value. If you're a BA reader, you love that. So you can immediately find underpriced seats, and before you buy, you can use SeatGeek's detailed maps to see the view from your seat. Best of all, SeatGeek is honest and upfront about price. SeatGeek shows you the full ticket price, unlike StubHub, from start to finish, and it never surprises you with huge fees at checkout. Baseball America podcast listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. So to get your $20 rebate on tickets, download the free SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab and click add a promo code, enter promo code BA20, that's BA, and then the numbers 2 and 0, and SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. Download the free SeatGeek app and enter promo code BA20 today.
We're back on the Baseball America podcast now with Jim Schoner and Mike Lanana. And guys, you guys also saw some college baseball this weekend up close and personal. We'll talk about that. You guys both saw Southeastern Conference and ACC teams, a couple SEC-ACC grudge matches, one with much larger grudges than the other. But what were y'all's takeaway, just real quick, on UCLA and USC, Mississippi State, Oklahoma? Anything you guys wanted to throw in, Jimmer?
That was a pretty big missed opportunity, I thought, for SC last night. Like how we've talked about how they're trying to kind of make up for that North Dakota series, and getting a win against the Bruins would have been a pretty big deal. Because they did beat Wake Forest series last week, which is a good start, but
it will help them. You beat an ACC team, that helps you from an RPI standpoint.
And then, but yeah, beating the Bruins would have been a nice little benchmark for them. But, I mean, it still feels like they're trending back in the right direction, at least.
That said, they've got at TCU next weekend, and they'll open Pac-12 play with Cal. They've got a Santa Barbara series in there. They've got to go to Stanford. They got to go to Oregon. Their series against UCLA is at UCLA. They do get the O-State Ballers at home, but whew, that's a tough road to hoe for USC. Time is kind of running out for them to...
I think it's running out for Oklahoma, too, to be honest.
And yeah, and I think that's yeah, right.
They need to get something done. They've not really shown much.
I mean, the start of the year, clearly, it's so compressed. So especially with the larger conferences like the ACC and SEC, yeah, where you really only have 3 weekends of non-conference to get...
I think the Big 12 has a little more, but...
Big 12 has a little more. The Pac-12 has 4 weeks. But, you know, the Pac-12 teams, they tell you every year, Mike, all the coaches out there correctly say, you know, it's not like where you're a Southeastern team and you can play non-conference midweek against Northeastern teams that are getting started and coming down for spring break, that kind of stuff early. Or you can play Big South or smaller conference teams. There's so many more college conferences in the Southeast, whereas out West, if you're a Pac-12 team and you're playing a Big West team midweek, that's not an easy game. No matter what Big West team you're playing, that's not an easy game. There are very few easy games on the West Coast at midweek, and so it feels like when you get off to a slow start like USC is, it's harder to climb out of that hole. Do you think have USC and Oklahoma put themselves in too big of a hole to dig out of early?
I mean, it's going to be tough for sure. And, you know, USC is a team that we had ranked, you know, fairly highly in the preseason. It's a team that we really liked, a veteran group. And, you know, I think kind of the key for them so far is, for one, they haven't been healthy on the mound. You know, they've missed Mitch Hart, who was great for them as a freshman last year. They haven't had Merritt Krause, who was a highly touted recruit coming in.
Yeah, 11th round pick.
Right. I mean, those are two arms that could help them quite a bit. And you look at what their weekend rotation has done so far this year. Kyle Davis has been solid. He's been steady, and they expected that. But really, the other two guys, Brent Wheatley, a guy who pitched for them last year, and, you know, Bernardo Flores, who pitched mainly out of the bullpen last year, they haven't been getting the job done so far. So, you know, I do think they have to figure out things on the pitching side and obviously try to generate a bit more offense, too. And it's going to be tough. I mean, you talked about their opponents that they have coming up. TCU is a very, very good team. That's going to be a very tough series for them. And I think that's going to say a lot about what the Trojans are. So they are in a deep hole. They can climb out of it, but they need to do it now. They need to win now.
Jim, I think you're right also about Oklahoma.
4-7-1.
They're 4-7-1. And they've got Long Beach State at home next weekend. They've got Wichita State at midweek. Those aren't gimmies. And they go to Fresno and Cal State Bakersfield. I'm sorry,
Fresno.
CSU Bakersfield is what they want to be called. Mm. Million different style for a Cal State team. Sorry, we're going to call it Cal State Bakersfield. Those aren't ranked teams. Long Beach State's in the discussion. We discussed the Dirtbags in last night's ranking meeting. Oklahoma better kick it into gear.
I mean, certainly Hanson pitching better this weekend is a big step for them, but like I said, they're in a hole, and yeah, Long Beach, not easy. Then they get Texas Tech and Texas to start conference play. So I mean, they've got to perform. I haven't looked at their. We're 3 weeks in, so it's a little early to start looking at RPIs, but I'd imagine they're. I mean, they're putting pressure on themselves. They're going to have to probably finish, you know, top 3-4 in that conference.
That sounds like a focus for this week's hashtag #ShowNerdology.
Exactly.
Of looking at which of these kind of preseason
teams. That is something I've kind of looked at a little bit, just like some of these power conference teams that are either like in the top 10 already or are in bad. Like North Carolina is number one right now.
In the RPI.
In the RPI, in the WarrenNolan.com RPI. And I should have put it up in front of me, but. There's like, I think North Carolina State's in the top 10. Florida's already in the top 10. There are several teams like that.
You know, you beat Dartmouth. That really gets done for you.
I mean, there are still like some random northern teams, like Central Connecticut State's like number 4 or something. So, but you know, those power conference teams are going to stay up there as long as they perform decently in conference play. And then you look at like their, you know, like, like a random, there's like a ACC team or something that's in like 110 or something like that. I mean, there's a lot of season left. That's a lot of ground to make up. The answer to all of it is you got to perform in conference play, but some of these teams have a little more margin than others.
And like you said, there's time. So for USC and Oklahoma, you don't press the panic button for what they did in Dodgertown, but you start to worry. Texas, 5-7. Yeah. They've played a stout schedule. We just talked about who are they playing next weekend. They're playing UCLA. Mm-hmm. You know,
and then Cal.
And so it's just not going to be easy for Texas. At some point, you can't just play good teams. You got to beat some of those good teams. So That was one of our questions going into the weekend with South Carolina, guys, was how good are the Gamecocks really? You know, we thought they were a regional team coming into the year, but they had not played a tough schedule, Mike, and this weekend they played Clemson. Correct me if I'm wrong, your impression of the Gamecocks coming out of this weekend is we didn't rank them because they lost the series, and yet I think you think more highly of them now than you did going into the weekend. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think so. I think I look at the Gamecocks, and I think on paper with the talent they have, I think it's a team that should be better than Clemson. Obviously, they weren't this weekend. Obviously, Clemson is the better team, but I really do like what they have talent-wise. You know, you look at their weekend rotation, you know, fronted by Clark Schmidt, who was excellent on Friday night. He was filthy. If he keeps pitching like that, they're not going to lose many Friday games. You look at Braden Webb, who is a draft-eligible freshman, who's, you know, I had him 90-93. On that Saturday game, and you know he's got a hammer of a curveball, and you know they have Taylor Widener, who's an asset as a Sunday starter, a guy who's closed for them before, a guy with a good fastball and a good slider. So they have a steady rotation, and then you know John Jones has been you know excellent for them, a JUCO transfer that they have. He's been batting in the middle of the order. He's been hitting everything, it seems, and Alex Destino has really stepped up as a sophomore. You know, had a huge game on Friday night, going 5 for 5, 4 RBIs. You know, he was a big difference maker for them offensively. So I like what they have. I think they have some pieces. You know, it was just kind of strange to see them on Saturday and Sunday. They almost looked a little listless. And, you know, good pitching will do that sometimes. You know, you have to give credit to Clemson. You know, Clayton Schmidt, the other Schmidt, pitched very, very well. His changeup was working. It was a plus pitch for him that day. He was keeping them off balance. And then Alex Eubanks, the freshman yesterday, was doing the same with his slider and his cutter, mixing it up and keeping the ball low in the zone. They're not guys that are going to overpower you, but, you know, if you can keep the ball low and throw strikes and play defense, which Clemson defended very well this weekend, you know, they're going to hit enough to win, you know, in a series like that. So,
and last year, Clemson did the same thing, right? I mean, they played really well. They pitched really well.
Right.
And it didn't seem like that didn't catapult Clemson to what they needed to do. It did seem like it kind of helped put South Carolina in a little bit of a funk. I mean, did they address that at all this weekend? Did their players talk at all about that, about trying to overcome the loss of this series that clearly matters to their fans, their recruiting, all that kind of stuff? Or was that not something where they just kind of focus on kind of next man up? And then they played, in general, fairly well this weekend.
Right. Well, you know, actually on Clemson's side, Andrew Cox, who's a veteran for him, he had a big hit yesterday, a two-run single that kind of broke things open. You know, he was talking about how last year that series they won, and then they didn't really do anything after that. You know, Clemson kind of had a middling season, you know, after that. And so, you know, I know on the Clemson side, they're certainly focused on moving forward and not getting too high after this series. You know, they're starting ACC play this week at Wake Forest, who's a tough team. You know, they're 9-3 this year, and that's there's gonna
very
be a lot
offensive.
Of offense. Yeah, it's going to be an offensive series for sure, especially in Winston-Salem. So, you know, they're not trying to, you know, they're trying not to bank on just this series alone. And, you know, South Carolina, you look at what they have coming up. I mean, other than this Clemson series, it's a pretty soft non-conference schedule. So you would have to think they can, you know, continue to pad this 10-2 record that they have right now going into SEC play. You know, I think they'll look good record-wise going into it, but it's going to be interesting to see how, you know, their first SEC test is against Arkansas. It's a very good team. So, you know, we'll see how they respond to that.
But one more non-conference week, correct, for South Carolina. And I guess the difference in the SEC and the ACC is that every ACC team takes a week off.
Yeah.
For exams, Southeastern Conference teams plow right through.
10 straight weeks of conference.
Ten straight weeks, no week off. So one more non-conference week for those teams to get right. The rest of the Southeastern Conference guys, any thoughts, Jim? Anybody in the SEC this week really do it for you? Hint, hint. I mean, I guess it's going to be Alabama. You saw the Crimson Tide. I saw 2 innings of Crimson Tide this weekend against Brown before I was freezing and decided to actually go seek shelter. There's no shelter at Field 2 at the MTC, I'll tell you that right now. But you know, obviously their biggest test of the weekend was NC State. They lost that. They did get a win against Notre Dame. What was your take on the Crimson Tide this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, they're very tough. They're going to give a lot of people trouble all year. I mean, it would not surprise me if they win a series against one of the big teams in the SEC, just mostly on the strength of their pitching. I mean, they don't have a... I do wonder a little bit about how much they're going to hit. I mean, they've got some physical guys, some athletes out there, but, I mean, they haven't You know, they haven't really killed the ball so far, but
they're last in the SEC in batting right now, and last in runs.
It's basically been two or three guys carrying them offensively, but pitching wise, I mean, they're not Florida or Vanderbilt, but they've got a pretty, especially have a deep bullpen. I mean, Thomas Burrows, his stat line is pretty insane so far. That 8 innings, 2 hits, 13 Ks. But it's a deep bullpen. Their rotation is solid, kind of like I said, kind of solid, but maybe not a bunch of first rounders, but they're solid. They'll play defense, so they're gonna win. They're gonna win some tight games, and they'll probably be. One of the things we've talked about when we were doing the rankings last night is they've got a home field now, which is gonna be a boost for them. We saw them. You know, they beat Maryland week one. That's a good series win. Another team I saw this weekend, but the Tide. They're gonna be. They're probably, you know, they're not in that elite level of the conference. They're not, you know, in the Florida Vanderbilt class, A&M class, but they're in the next group. I think that's pretty safe to say right now.
We're not putting them on that pinnacle use the Cam Newtonism. That's my favorite Cam Newtonism.
We will analyze them from every angle, though.
He does have that malapropism tool in him, and that's it's not even that tangential. He's an SEC player, so we could bring him up in this milieu. We'll see. Alabama, Nick Eichholz did not pitch this weekend. Forearm strain. Mm-hmm. We'll see how significant that injury is. They would certainly rather have him than not have him. But this weekend, obviously, they were able to overcome that pitching-wise. You were also in Greenville, Jim, to see some Keith LeClair Classic. Yep. Did you get to see the Tennessee Vols there? And if so, what was your takeaway on a Tennessee team that is off to a 7-3 start, and it's an offense-first team, which is really surprising. But it's surprising. That's Dave Serrano coached team in his fourth season there. We kind of thought that his reputation has been made, his bones have been made as a pitching guy, and yet Tennessee's really, outside of Zach Godley, hashtag personal cheese ball, outside of Zach Godley, I think in Serrano's first season there, they really haven't pitched great, and they still aren't pitching great. Now his son Kyle Serrano's out of the mix with injuries. So kind of what was your takeaway from the Volunteers there?
Yeah, I mean, that's an offensive team. I think them and Alabama play each other, I think, second week of conference play, so that's going to be a little bit of a contrast in styles. But, obviously Nick Senzel.
Yes.
It's training day.
That's right.
Calls the, obviously he's the guy that gets the headlines there, but it's a pretty deep offense. I mean, they torched Mike Schwerin on Friday. I mean,
that's pretty
impressive. Yeah, he is my guy. And then beat East Carolina on Saturday. So that's a pretty good win. Did come up short yesterday against Southeastern Louisiana. But, that's a good offensive team. They've got some power. They've got guys that can find the gaps. They've got some speed. They've got some, good athletes. Vincent Jackson's a big guy who kind of protects Senzel in that lineup.
A guy who's been there, was a highly recruited player out of the Atlanta area. Was a really big get for Tennessee when they first got Vincent Jackson. So it's good from a prospect standpoint to kind of see him finally start to produce when a lot was expected of him earlier in his career.
So, they're going to win. It feels like they're probably going to win most their games. Like, they're going to win more 6-5 games than 3-2 games, it feels like. Their bullpen kind of let them down. The two games they lost both games I saw. I didn't see them on Saturday when they beat the Pirates, but the bullpen kind of let them down both games. Their starters didn't go very deep, so obviously missing Serrano is a big deal there. So that's a little bit of a worry. They're definitely a chance to be a regional team. I know that's kind of that program has been waiting for that, and they've kind of thought they could do it, and they haven't done it yet. So that's kind of the thing. We want to see them prove it.
It's an athletic department in some tumult. That's a kind way, I think, to put it. So that is just a prime opportunity for a baseball program where if you want you want the campus to rally around you, you want to get some attention. If they win some early Southeastern Conference series, I would imagine that Tennessee's baseball program would be the toast of campus. So it's a real opportunity for them. See if they can seize it. Mike, just other takeaways for you from the Southeastern, the rest of the SEC, and one of the games I did get a chance to watch a little bit online was Tristan Beck and Stanford against Vanderbilt. Tristan Beck, you can see why the Braves offered that guy $2.5 million plus in the draft last year. And yet Vanderbilt, again, loses the opening game. comes back and wins the rest of that series against Stanford. Pitched very well, only gave up 7 runs all weekend. You had Florida, you know, with some trouble in one game against Dartmouth, but walk-off homer from Buddy Reed. Florida doing what they're supposed to do, sweeping. Any other SEC teams from this weekend catch your fancy or capture any of the buzz among the SEC and the South Carolina media, of which there's many, this weekend for you while you're around the SEC?
For me, it's got to be Ole Miss. It's got to be the Rebels. You know, I'm hearing the Rebel yell right now.
See, the word Rebels makes me think of Public Enemy, the rhythm, the Rebel, without a pause, I'm lowering my level, the hard rhymer, et cetera, et cetera. But for you, it's you went Billy Idol.
I went Billy Idol, yeah.
And Billy Idol's songs are older than Public Enemy's. So yeah. I don't know what's going on there, but...
A little weird, but... Yeah, you know, they're knocking on the door of, you know, really that elite group in the SEC, I feel like. I mean, you look at them, they've really been on a roll, taking 2 out of 3 against Louisville, who was our number 2 team in the preseason, and a very good team. It was at home, but hey, I mean, winning 2 games against that team isn't an easy thing to do. And then, you know, they come to Conway, South Carolina, this weekend, playing in the Chanticleer Classic, and they sweep the competition. You know, they beat Coastal, who was in our rankings. We've dropped them this week after a 6-5 start to the season. And, you know, so that they've won, you know, now 5 games in a row. They've scored 7 runs or more in their last 4 games. And you look at their team and, you know, they have some very interesting prospects on this team. You know,
right.
You know, guys like Errol Robinson at shortstop, you know, with a lot of athleticism there, a lot of tools there. J.P. Woodman out in the outfield. And Brady Bramlett's been very good for them as a Friday starter. He's a quality guy, a guy with a lot of experience. And
let's face it, J.B. Woodman is made to play in Omaha.
Yeah.
There's a building that says Woodman. I mean, I know it's plural Woodman, but it's downtown. It's, you know, I know it's not the First National Bank Tower is the tallest building now. But let's face it, when your name is J.B. Woodman, I mean, it's almost like your density, I mean, your destiny to play in Omaha. So... I don't even remember. Was he on the 2014 team? I don't think he was. He's a sophomore now.
Yeah, I don't remember him.
J.B. Woodman. He's a junior.
I guess he would have been on that team. So forgive me. I guess he's already fulfilled his destiny. But
yeah.
he this is a, you know, a high school quarterback, star, big time recruit for them as a baseball player. He was a big draft guy. He was kind of like if you're a prospect fan, he was like the next version of Brett Phillips for area scouts there in Central Florida. Brett Phillips was the guy who was a baseball guy, but had been an all-conference football player that fall. Teams didn't have a huge read on him. He had a good spring, not being a 6th-round pick. The next year, that's who J.B. Woodman was kind of compared to. He's a different kind of player. He's a little more physical and a little bit less speed-oriented guy than Brett Phillips. But yeah, I expected that he was going to be able to hit the ground running and be a instant contributor and factor at Ole Miss. It's neat to see him developing that way as a junior, you know, better late than ever. The other thing I love about Ole Miss is that it's scheduled tougher than most SEC teams do in the non-conference. And they go on the road. Like you said, last weekend they played Louisville. I like that about Coach Mike Bianco. To me, Ole Miss's program is kind of similar to North Carolina's. And they haven't gotten over that hump as far as winning a national championship. But you know, they had a long string of successes. Mike Bianco's been there a long time. He hasn't been afraid to adjust, though, to reevaluate what he's done there. I really have a lot of respect for that. I used to be on the kind of bashing Bianco kind of train. I thought that they were a program that never got over the hump and never was going to. And I just love the fact that he has adjusted as a head coach because he's had to. And he's gotten better at things. They've gotten more athletic as a team. They recruit a little bit differently. Carl Lafferty, I think, does a really nice job as their recruiting coordinator. They've had to adjust with Cliff Godwin leaving the program. But I have a lot of respect for Coach Bianco and the way that the Ole Miss program has adjusted from what was like a nadir in, 2013, Jim, when they were riding high midseason. They had a collapse in the second half, were terrible here in the regional over at NC State. But they've changed the way they do things in that program. They haven't overhauled it, just made some tweaks. So I'm encouraged for Ole Miss. I like to see coaches who learn from their mistakes and get better at it. And maybe mistakes is even too harsh of a word, but I like that for what Ole Miss has done. So Put bluntly, I kind of root for Ole Miss to do well because I like to see that Mike Bianco has seen things that he was doing, kept the things he liked and that were working, and has adjusted to it. Errol Robinson is another guy it's easy to root for.
Mm-hmm.
Saw that guy at the AFLAC tournament. I don't think anyone questions the defense for him on the college side, but if that guy hits, he has a chance to be top 2 rounds of the draft because there are not that many college middle infielders competing with him. So
right.
I'm
much thinner shortstop group this year, college wise, than last year. We were spoiled last year.
And then yeah, that's okay. To pull a Stuart Smalley, we don't need to have six or seven or eight college shortstops go in the first 2-3 rounds every year. That makes us appreciate what we had last year even more. So Baseball America College Podcast. Guys, I'll go to your final thoughts. Any other takeaways that you guys had, Mike, besides just all the crowds and the smell of success there that you saw there in South Carolina and Clemson, that series? I mean, Fluor Field's a pretty – I love that field. It's one of my favorite ballparks down in Greenville, South Carolina. Underrated city, underrated destination. I've enjoyed my trips there. Whether it was from that series or anything else, what was your kind of your final thought here for the podcast?
Yeah, I mean, I think my biggest question, you know, from everything that we've talked about so far is, where are my pants? I think that's my biggest question. No.
I'm telling you, that was an epic moment that will hopefully never be repeated in BA podcast history.
Well, it just happened.
Where are my pants? I want to see what... I need my pants! It was just great. That guy was... he was having a rough day. Rough day in San Francisco that morning.
But no, I really enjoyed my time in South Carolina this weekend. It was my first time checking out Fluor Field and really my first time exploring Greenville. And, you know, it was a cooler downtown area than I was expecting.
It's
and
got some funk.
It does. It does have some funk. And
it hides it well.
Yeah. And so it was a cool city. And I really like what Clemson is doing with Doug Kingsmore. They built a new baseball center on the first base side. And I was able to tour that, their SID there. Brian Hennessy was great and showing me everything there. And
I believe he is the dean of ACC baseball SIDs. I believe he has, with perhaps 1 or 2 year interruption, I believe he's been the SID at Clemson since 1996. Either 96 or 95. He barely predates me. There was a year or two in there where he wasn't the baseball contact, but Brian is a pro's pro.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the crazy thing is the MVPs of that series, correct me if I'm wrong, are named for the two longtime sports formation guys.
Yes.
Tom Price at South Carolina. And, oh, God, I can't believe I can't remember the Clemson guy's name. I think his last name is Bradley. Please look that up for me because... those two gentlemen were the sports formation contacts for those two schools for so long and had such respect. The MVPs of the series between those two schools is named for the two sports formation longtime contacts. Those were very difficult shoes to fill, and yet Brian Hennessy and Andrew Kittick have done it so ably over the last 15-20 years. Bob Bradley, thank you. I did not want to get that wrong. Those two guys are such pros. That's actually from a media standpoint. I know we're a little inside baseball here. That's one of the funnest things about covering that series, really, isn't it? Dealing with those two guys?
Yeah, no, it's their SIDs are two of the top SIDs in the business that I've come across. So it's
one of these days we'll probably end up doing a rankings for that on a deep page and offending all the SIDs we don't rank and doing an SIDs podcast. So that's why we don't do that. We don't want to piss anybody off. But those guys are on the short list. They're just real professionals.
Oh, definitely. And it's cool to see... you know, just all the attention and excitement around college baseball there. You know, it almost reminded me somewhat of an Omaha kind of feel, you know, walking into TD Ameritrade Park and seeing all the buzz and tailgating and all of that. I mean, you see that there. I saw it in Greenville. I saw it in Clemson. You know, people were excited about it. And, you know, doing press conferences after the game and having, you know, hordes of media there, you know, it's just cool to see. And both were record-breaking crowds, you know, the 2 days I was there in Greenville and Clemson. So
I would have to imagine that Brad Brownell and Frank Martin, the basketball coaches of those two schools, look on very jealously at the passion that fans of the Palmetto State have for college baseball. It is my number one favorite thing about the Palmetto State. It's not even close. I love how much their fans are into not just that rivalry, but it's college baseball, and it's not just those two schools. That's the other great thing about it. College of Charleston, Citadel, Winthrop, all over that state. Coastal. Francis Marion, Coastal, exactly. I mean, Francis Marion, the D2 level. There's good junior college baseball in South Carolina, Spartanburg Methodist. I mean, and other programs. That state is a baseball state. It's a great baseball state. I know it's a football state, too, but it's a great baseball state, and you just can't take anything away from the Palmetto State when it comes to baseball. Jimmer, I wanted to ask you, among your other takeaways, process for our readers, Dallas Baptist scoring 33 stinking runs in a game. Because Dallas Baptist had not been off to a great start.
No, not, a little not iffy. Especially. Yeah, I mean, they lost that series to Oral Roberts. I mean, I think they are an offensive, I mean, even before that, we knew they were an offensive team. They've got some, you know, they've always had some physical guys, but I mean, kind of, I guess you kind of combine that with going to Albuquerque. I know they don't, I assume New Mexico's park is,
it's the it's Isotopes. Like the,
I don't, do they still play there?
I thought they did. Are they at Lobo Field now instead?
I assume it's the same, you know, altitude and whatnot, so I assume you still can hit the ball there, but yeah, I mean, you combine that, I mean, that was 33 runs. I mean, it's one thing when you see a, you know, Florida State do that against some, you know, poor Northern team or something, but to see, you know, to go on the road to a good program in New Mexico and put up 33, I mean, I can't even begin to register that. But, yeah, I mean, so that's, obviously that was a, and they did end up winning that series. So, I mean, DBU, we kind of like them as the favorite in the Valley. So that was a big thing for them. I would say a few other takeaways I kind of had this weekend. We're a little worried about Virginia. They didn't exactly come back with a vengeance after losing that series to the Pirates.
No, especially when you win the first game with Connor Jones.
Yeah.
Then on Saturday you take a 9-0 lead and against Monmouth and blow it, and then and they wound up winning the game and then lose the finale.
Yeah.
I think they're still trying to figure out their bullpen a little bit.
Yeah, I think
there.
That's been the problem.
And they start with Duke in ACC play.
Yeah, so we'll
play.
See them here.
So even with Connor Jones, that's not a given on Friday because they're going against Bailey Clark.
Yeah.
That's going to be a great matchup on Friday. But that is, I'm with you. I'm questioning the Cavaliers, but hey, guess what? We did that this time last year.
Yeah, they struggled last year.
So, I mean, maybe the secret for them is don't finish in the top 10 in ERA nationally.
Now they got a couple guys get hurt. Maybe that's the
key. Yeah. Add some more trials and tribulations. By the way, this weekend, I will finally present Brian O'Connor with his Coach of the Year award.
Nice.
So, yeah, waited to do that until they're in town. Yeah, exactly. You come to us. You want your stinking award? You come here, doggone it. I mean, it's. We are, in some ways, we're ridiculous. That's one of them.
Speak of the Pirates. I mean,
Pirates.
They kind of played to type the two games I saw them. They're not really, they don't overwhelm you with talent, but they're a tough, hard-nosed team. That was what it took to win the two games I saw against Southeast Louisiana and Maryland.
I hope Joe Ingles' arm is made of the rubber.
He's going to need to make it, yeah.
He pitches a lot. Nine strikeouts yesterday?
Yeah, he threw 3 innings against Maryland, I think, and he threw 3 innings in a midweek game. So
I'm going to tell you, if he's Fayetteville tough. Being Fayetteville tough myself, but being from Fayetteville, there's some tough kids down there. Joe Engel, he was really good for them last year as a freshman. I don't know if you can say he's made the leap again, it looks like. But they ride him heavily.
Yeah.
He's an integral part of the Pirates' success. I'll tell you, the conference, they're in the American. The American looks very solid.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was checking on Conference USA this weekend because I was looking at Florida Atlantic. We talked about them as a ranked team. Is Rice another team we need to worry about, guys? Or 6-6?
A little bit. I'd like to see more. They were not that competitive in the Shriners College Classic out there. It feels like they lost the home series to Arizona, who's, it's not the worst thing in the world, but they're not a team.
They're not a
regional
team. Right.
So, I kind of like to see. I saw Duplantier pitch really well this weekend, so that's obviously big. But
yeah, he's been huge. Just getting him back, I know they sorely missed him last year. He didn't pitch at all for them, so
they got a lot of run with Blake Fox's taking off his hat pickoff throw. That's like the viral college baseball video of the week.
Yeah,
the last couple of weeks. But I am concerned. I think that could be a focus for Shonerdology, whether it's like the theme of 1 week, or you could be like, here's the team that always goes to regionals that needs to be careful. Watch for this week.
Yeah.
Because it feels like Rice might be on that. So, good job, guys. A long podcast today with Teddy's California contribution. And we waxed eloquent as well about the college baseball we saw. I know we're excited about some conference. I mean, there are a few conferences that have already started play.
Fresno beating San Diego State, it's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, I mean, the Mountain West has already started. I think there are a couple other ones around the country that have had at least one series. But we get more and more into conference play next weekend when the ACC kicks into gear. And then really the next week, it's pretty much everybody, especially when the SEC gets started. So
everybody except the Big Ten.
Which is odd because they only have, 14 teams that they have to play.
Yeah, play 8 seriously, yeah.
They have a lot to go. I think the main thing is they can't play conference games at home in March because they would freeze.
Mm.
So that makes sense from a Big Ten perspective. just sit back and wait. Global climate change will take care of all these inequities in college baseball scheduling. We just have to wait it out a little bit, guys. So on that political note, for Mike and for Jim and for SeatGeek, our sponsor here on the podcast, and for Ted Cahill, I'm John Manuel. We'll see you on the next Baseball America College podcast. Until then, so long, everybody.